The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Sarah Keogh, our resident dietitian, is with us to answer all of your questions, and there are buckets of them already in. I will get to them in a sec. First of all, story in the Examiner today saying the nutritional value of school scheme meals needs to be evaluated. And the government apparently is going to review the nutritional value of the meals given to school children as it expands its meal programme to every primary school in the country. Sarah Keogh, this is, first of all, the universality of it. We are all paying for the kids of those whose parents have enough money to pay for them to feed themselves, and most of the food is muck.
Well, I don't know, it's not. And we're going to start there with that, because I think we love to hate anything when we, you know, something good is happening. I think people queue up to go, what's wrong with it? I love the universality of it. I think that we often don't know what's going on in families. We don't know what people are struggling with. And I think, you know, it's lovely to say lots of people have money, and great, they do. But, you know, lots of people don't. And I don't think singling out kids and you have that whole bullying issue with it, I just think it's brilliant. Let's give everybody the food. What I find a huge amount of people don't know about the school meals is there are nutrition standards. There have been nutrition standards since the beginning. Huge guidelines around what they can and can't have. People come in to me and go, oh, it's all chicken nuggets and that. They're on the menu, but they're only allowed once a week to have those. On the other days, it has to be your turkey, veg and potato dinner or your lasagna dinner or whatever. And also the schools can decide whether or not to give them. They don't actually have to. So the companies that produce the school meals will put the options into the school, and then the school can choose what they're going to have on the menu. So you don't actually have to give them chicken nuggets and chips if you don't want to in the schools.
So the schools themselves can select the higher nutritional value if they want.
The Parents Association can have a look and they can see. But actually, they're very careful with them in terms of the fat and the salt and the sugar. Like, I've worked with some of these companies over the years, and like, these are normal people whose kids are actually eating these foods. They're not actually big evil people out to get you. You know, so they do look at this. They look at additives. They look at all of these different things with it. I think it's brilliant that we're going to look at it. And I think what we need to do is assess it on the ground. And it's brilliant. I know this, they've announced they're going to have a dietitian come in and actually start to work on that area, which is really important. But I think we need to remember there's a whole lot of fuss about foods that in the most case are actually pretty good.
What about the parents who will say, well, look, my child used to come home in the evenings and I would feed them quinoa and kale and all sorts of high-end good stuff. But now what's going to happen is they're going to have the chicken nugget day and they're going to fill themselves up with nuggets, come home and not eat the nutritional thing that I would otherwise get.
They're not going to fill themselves up on nuggets because they don't actually just give them a big bowl of it and the kids eat. They get a serving of it, which is, you know, a child-sized serving. You know, so yes, it's there. But the thing is, they don't have to choose it, or they can talk to the school and not have it. I wonder, though, if they're going to take them out, because one of the things they were saying that they're going to review is that they're going to remove any kind of high salt or, you know, those kind of foods from it. So they may go off the menu altogether, that there won't be that treat day in the school with it.
But your view would be it is possible to have a combination of food that is desirable by kids, but nutritionally ticking all the boxes.
Desirable by kids is huge. Anybody who has kids, you have fussy eaters. There is literally no way anywhere somebody is going to be able to put in a meal that every single child is going to eat, except chicken nuggets and chips, you know. So you will do your best with it. But I think it'll open up, I think, for a lot of kids. They might try foods they wouldn't have tried, or might have vegetables that maybe somebody at home doesn't cook. So I actually think you're going to see kids trying maybe some more foods. And kids are really funny with peer pressure on eating. Actually, if someone else is eating the food around them, kids are more likely to try it. And we know that from a lot of studies on fussy eating. You might actually find kids weren't eating vegetables starting with that, if it's, you know, if it's supported.
53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. I said there were buckets of queries in already. They are. Some of them I may actually be able to pronounce. I have been diagnosed with osteopenia and was given calcitue, but wonder if it causes arterial calcification given the fact that my calcium blood test revealed it being at the upper end of the range. Is there anything specific available that just goes straight to the bones? You understood that, Sarah.
I understood all of that. So what's coming on there is that there was a couple of studies about 20 years ago that showed that people who were taking very high levels of just calcium were getting possibly a little more calcium into the arteries, and that's part of heart disease and things like that. The thing was, those people were taking about 4,000 milligrams of calcium. If you're on something like Calcitue or a standard calcium supplement, it's around 1,000 milligrams of calcium, where we don't see that issue. But also you need to take vitamin D as well. So totally fine. If you've osteopenia and you're not taking your dairy, now you can get it from taking your 3 servings of dairy a day. So your milk, cheese and yogurt will do it. But if you're not doing that, I would definitely get onto the calcium supplement. In terms of your blood calcium being high, that actually doesn't match eating calcium. So people, it's your blood calcium level has to be kept at a certain level because it's involved in blood clotting and muscle contraction, particularly for your heart. So your body doesn't let your blood calcium levels come up and down unless there's actually an issue going on with it. So a high blood calcium does not reflect how much calcium you're eating. So I wouldn't be tracking the two, but I'd be chatting to my doctor about the high blood calcium.
Is that why malnutrition can lead to calcium deficiency in the bones? The body leaches it back out of the bones.
Because you can't keep your heart beating if you don't have good calcium levels. So it's one of the reasons we get osteoporosis when you're adults. If you don't stop taking the dairy, your body just starts sucking it out of your hips instead to keep the heart beating.
Well, on that note, I have osteoporosis and high cholesterol, and I was given two leaflets about diet from my GP. But they contradict each other, both with totally different diets. Which diet should I go by? Right. So there's your choice. Cholesterol or osteoporosis?
The mistake a lot of people make when it comes to something like cholesterol is cutting out dairy. So actually, I have a good post on Instagram at Sarah Keogh RD that goes into really big detail about the cholesterol, but without you having to cut out the dairy with it. So if you do have osteoporosis, we need the calcium, and dairy is a very rich source of it, but not cream and butter. So if you do have high cholesterol, you can definitely knock them on the head, and they're brilliant to reduce. But milk and yogurt are not going to raise your cholesterol, and they're really good sources of calcium.
Skim milk, low fat, full fat. Doesn't matter.
They all have about the same amount of calcium in them. People have this idea that low-fat milk has less calcium, but it actually is slightly more than full-fat. But what you're looking at is that cheese would come in there, can raise your cholesterol, but I'd always look at everything else first. I'd be looking at the biscuits and the cakes and the butter and the cream and all of that first. I'd rarely, if ever, have to take someone off that. What I would say to that caller is actually book in and see a registered dietitian, because one session would actually just set you up that you have. And the thing is, with osteoporosis, calcium is one factor. You also need your vitamin D supplements. You also need to look at your protein levels. You need to look at your exercise. And you also need to get a celiac test, because osteopenia and osteoporosis can be caused by celiac disease. And particularly if you're young enough that you're getting those, like if you're kind of not in your 60s, I'd probably just check out that you're not celiac and maybe malabsorbing calcium there as well.
Difference between osteopenia and osteoporosis?
So osteoporosis is the full, where the bones are quite kind of weak. Osteopenia would be stage one on the way. So it'd be like if you have osteopenia, it's like, right, get things sorted out, or you're going to get osteoporosis.
Also like prediabetes type 1. Yeah, right. Yeah. Text saying, are protein powders worth taking?
So they can have a value. I'd always go food first if you can. So it's really good to get your protein foods in, like your eggs, your fish, your meat, your beans, your tofu. All of those are going to be really good. With protein shakes, if you're struggling to get it in with food, they can be helpful. If you are doing a huge amount of bodybuilding, for example, and you're trying to top up protein through the day, they can be helpful. I find most people overshoot.
But presumably you'd have to be lifting seriously heavy to need to be on protein shakes.
A lot, like when you overdo protein, the human body doesn't store it. So when you take too much protein, we'll use exactly the protein we need, and any extra protein just goes on as fat. So you just, that's where the belly comes in. I see loads of people putting on fat with the protein shakes. And also when people are trying to calculate out their protein, they only tend to look at the meat. They forget about all the protein and things like bread and dairy and so on. So they tend to be way over the protein that they think. So protein shakes can be helpful. I find the vast majority of people don't need them.
I always thought that protein was our good, pure, trustworthy friend and would never convert into fat. But excess protein becomes fat.
Loads of people think you can just keep eating the protein. It just magically keeps building the muscles, which would be wonderful because we could just sit on the couch watching TV eating strips of chicken, you know. But, you know, it's calories. So if you eat too much of it, it just puts on weight, like sugar or carbs or anything else.
Text to say, I'm getting white spots on my nails. Is this a vitamin deficiency?
No, it's usually you're just hitting them off something. When we see vitamin deficiencies and things in nails, what you see is ridges coming up in the nails, either horizontally or vertically would come up, or they're breaking or flaking, or they're kind of splitting into layers. They're more likely to be things like a protein deficiency or issues around minerals. But the white spots actually we think are just you hitting your hand off something and not noticing.
Oh, I had always thought that, because I remember I was in school and there was one of the guys had that, and I looked it up at the time and it had some very clear, oh, well, this is definitely X deficiency.
We see funny things in nails. Like if they look like you're kind of a spoon, you know, like a teaspoon or something like that, that's usually an iron deficiency. So stuff like that. Like you do see all sorts of stuff in nails, but the white spots doesn't seem to have a particular nutritional basis.
There's also, and clubbing can be a very clear indicator of respiratory. I'm a breastfeeding mother and type 1 diabetic. My baby is 9 months and on solid since 6 months, but my blood sugars are still wildly out of control. I hear lots about not restricting your diet while breastfeeding, but any advice would be most appreciated.
So to be honest, type 1 diabetes can be a bit complicated. So I kind of say, go and see your dietitian. But what you might do in the meantime is have a look at what we call low GI foods. So low glycemic glycemic index foods that are just slow release and they tend not to give quite as high blood glucose, but they also don't give the dip so that you're not going up and down and up and down. So they'd be things like oats, things like porridge would be really good. Things like pasta are quite good. Beans and lentils are really good like that.
Is pasta good? I always thought pasta was...
It's quite nice for GI with that. So it's kind of adding those foods in. But the thing about it is if you have a 9-month baby, you're probably not sleeping. And anyone with diabetes will tell you once the sleep is gone, the blood glucose can just go all over the place with it. So I would check back in with your dietitian and just say you're really struggling with it and sit down and just let them work through it with you.
Presumably the combination of both pregnancy and breastfeeding kicks the absolute lining out of a woman's system and blood sugars and everything else.
Do you know what I mean? And the sleep, as I said, the sleep deprivation is just a killer with it as well.
A text to say, morning, please mention it's very important to get tested for multiple myeloma if blood calcium is high. Another, I'm a big fan of school meals, but it's incorrect to say that kids are restricted to, say, nuggets once a week. They can have it every day unless the parent intervenes, at least in my kid's school. I wonder if that's going to be an issue of how the schools themselves follow the regs.
So that's what it is. So the standards are there, but it's, as you said, you can have standards, but if nobody's checking them, that's going to be the issue. So Safefood have done nutrition standards and they're there. And obviously, you know, it's we're first round doing this. It's probably going to take a while to get it completely right. But I think it is checking the schools matching the standards. And that's where we need to look at them. But those standards are available on the Safefood website, safefood.eu, if anybody actually wants to go and have a look at them.
Text coming back to the issue of protein supplements. With regard to protein supplements and shakes, what is, quotes, a huge amount of exercise? I have an 18-year-old who goes to the gym 5 times a week. He also plays Gaelic twice. He's all about his protein and macros, etc., etc., etc. He has those shakes every morning. Does he need them?
Probably not if he's eating other proteins at breakfast. But I'd say to you, if you do have someone who's really exercising at a high level, I'd always say, would you ever just go and see a sports dietitian? It's so funny, like we'll just take random nutrition advice from anywhere. Like, but you know, we'll go to a physio or whatever. Go and see a dietitian because actually there's...
Joe Rogan covers it all. You can just listen.
You know, but actually, no, you need someone to sit down individually and kind of go, what does this person actually need? Because apart from anything else, it ends up being a fortune. Like I know I've worked with people over the years and they come back to me, I've saved the cost of the consultation in what I'm not spending on steak and, you know, all the rest and protein shakes. You know, so it's just have a look at it. I mean, that's a good bit of exercise. Someone who's going to the gym 5 times a week, GAA training, matches and all the rest. But at the same time, they probably don't need... I find it's very rare I meet someone who isn't overshooting their protein when they think, you know, when they're doing the sports stuff.
My understanding was that it was almost physically impossible to feed a teenage male who was into an awful lot of sport.
You can do it, but they need calories. Do you know what I mean? It's not necessary. They obviously need protein as well, but the calories actually is the big, big thing with it. And I mean, if you look at elite athletes who are working with kind of sports dietitians, they actually would have much more carbohydrate than protein. And because you're looking at those calories.
I remember one of the papers in one of the Olympics did the sort of the Michael Phelps diet, on which was something like 6,500 calories today. And there was an amazing amount of waffles in an elite sports person.
Like if you're actually exercising nonstop and training, like the amount of calories, like to try and fit it in. And it's also what the athlete likes to eat. Do you know, because if you're going to actually be training like that and exercising like that, you have to like the food that you're eating as well. So,
speaking of exercising all the time, our own Adonis Bobby Kerr has joined us.
My body's a temple. I'm here.
Bobby, what have you got coming up on the end of business?
Okay, so Peter Goodman, the New York Times expert, is going to be telling us all about where we are with Trump and what to expect next. I'm also going to be talking to Eamon Brennan. Now, many of you may know him. Former CEO of the Irish Aviation Authority and indeed former CEO of the European Aviation Authority, and he's going to have a lot to say, so I'm looking forward to that. I'll be looking at the future of TikTok and we'll be examining performance art schools, School of Rock, School of Dance and the School of Acting. There you go.
Look forward to it, Bobby. Bobby Kerr there. He's going to be with you in about 20 minutes-ish with Down to Business. Before I let you go, Sarah, one final one saying, are diets high in protein and fat bad for you in the long run? My husband has been eating things like lean red meat, avocado and nuts, but I'm worried about his heart.
So I would always be checking cholesterol there, because what we are finding is that they're taking literally solid lumps of cholesterol out of the carotid arteries of 35-year-old men in the States. And I can't think of the guy's name, but he's been a big promoter of the carnivore diet and he's had a stroke there in the last 2 weeks because of high cholesterol. And what you'll see with a lot of those very high fat diets, they talk about cholesterol not being an issue because, you know, everyone goes, oh, well, your cholesterol goes up. And then they go, oh, no, it's fine. It's not fine. So now nuts and avocado wouldn't be the worst, but definitely check the cholesterol. If that's up, then have a rethink in terms of what he's doing.
Sarah, as ever, thank you so much. That is Sarah Kyoko.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.